Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
It is time to fire it up, the Boss and the Gloss. Sitting next to me is my friend, the Gloss, the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson. Welcome in.
I like being introduced as your friend. I'll take that.
You are. And my other friend behind the glass, Jose, ¿cómo estás tú?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Look at Jose. He's like, I'm not answering you in Spanish.
Oh, yeah, no.
You might not really be his friend then.
He knows because I don't speak Spanish that well.
Yeah, I didn't want to expose his limitations.
You're being kind.
He would have outed me.
That's very nice, Jose. Jose is always courteous.
Jose, how do you think the Gloss looks? Does she look tired? I mean, she was at that game late last night at Minute Maid Park. Astros, it ended at midnight, and then you have to get through the traffic to get home. That's a late night. How's she look?
She looks glossier than usual.
Really?
The gloss could be in my eyes that are glossed over. 1:30 a.m., I hit the pillow.
Is that right?
And then I was so excited I couldn't get to sleep for a while. That was a really amazing Correa walk-off bottom of the 11th.
Yeah, you couldn't have scripted it any better. Of course, the post-mortem is that he predicted it. He told two people that he was going to do it, and he went out and did it. Amazing.
Well, and I predicted it to my husband. I said next to him, Correa needs this. We need this. We got to get out of here. We need a home run right now. First pitch, there he goes.
It was getting late. Everyone was ready for a win. And a big win it was, tying that series 1-1. And we sit here at the best time of the year because there's so much going on in the sports calendar. Yeah, the Rocktober's fantastic. Nationals hosting the Cardinals. It is 0-0 in the second inning. And that's a matchup that thus far has looked like it's going to be the Nationals.
Which is, you know, I think what I tend to forget about the Nationals, they were the wild card. And they were behind at Milwaukee. 3 runs in the bottom of the 8th. I mean, this is a great story.
When we come back, we're going to take a look at the two series, Yankees and Astros and Nationals and Cardinals. We'll break them down. We'll also say what happened to the Dodgers. Why are they not in the NLCS?
Ooh,
all that and more when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and we are enjoying the midst of October and all that is on the sports calendar. And you were enjoying time at Minute Maid Park last night, there to the very end, the big win, Astros over the Yankees. What was it like to be in the stadium?
It was electric, and it was stressful.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. The longer you let the Yankees hang around, it's not good. But it was, let me introduce you to our entire bullpen from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every inning it was a pitching change. They pulled their starting pitcher. Gosh, who was starting last night?
Paxton.
Early.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of the second inning.
And there was only one run scored on him, yet
right.
He was pulled.
Right. And, you know, the Astros were able to string runners on base, and, you know, nothing much happened with it, one run. But it started early. Verlander did last to the seventh. He did a nice job yesterday. Gave up one home run to Aaron Judge. 2-run homer. That hurt. But then Springer came alive. He's had a real dismal postseason. I mean, his batting average is like a 115, but hit a home run when it mattered. Same with Correa.
Well, the Astros' bats have not been impressive in the postseason this year.
No, not in the Tampa Bay series as well. So I hope last night that the walk-off home run by Correa, who really loves the big moments, this was his fourth walk-off home run in the postseason. He's really stout. Then hopefully that's going to kick in for if you're an Astros fan. But
well,
boy, is New York stout.
I was not at the stadium as you were. And, of course, in the stadium, I know it's electric there. Minute Maid Park is a real home field advantage.
Yes.
You can feel the energy in the place, particularly in the postseason. But watching it did seem like you had two managers who were engaged in a chess match. Aaron Boone, AJ Hinch.
They're two very like managers as well.
They have similar philosophies. I mean, AJ Hinch, remember in the World Series a couple of years ago, in that whole postseason, he was very aggressive about using his starters as relievers. He did sort of whatever it took.
Verlander closed games, Charlie Morton closed game
That's
seven.
Right.
I mean, it was, yeah, and it worked. So why wouldn't other people adopt that?
Right.
It won the Astros a World Series.
And then, of course, last night, I mean, there Aaron Boone was pulling his starter after two innings and really turning the game over to a whole swath of bullpen pitchers.
Mm-hmm. That would face one batter. I mean, it's exciting, right. Yet you have to be really patient. I love the game, so I did not mind being there for 5 hours, seriously 5 hours.
Right.
It was so worth it.
Well, people have the patience for that in the postseason because so much is at stake.
Every at-bat
matters so significantly. Obviously, when it comes into the regular season, there's less patience for all those changes of pitchers.
Well, what's interesting now, too, so I love the 7-game series because a 5-game series, it's not basically the best team wins. You
right.
just don't know what happens in a 5-game series. In a 7-game series, I do think that makes a difference. However, this is now essentially with 1-1, you know, New York grabbing one at home, grabbing one on the road, Houston taking one at home. They go to New York for 3 games, and it's a 5-game series again.
Well, it's so funny because in my mind,
you start over.
Looking at that game last night, I felt like it was a must-win for the Astros.
It was, I agree.
Because they have to go on the road and face the Yankees for 3 games. The other side of that is I heard some people on the Yankees side saying, well, it's a must-win for the Yankees because they don't want to face Gerrit Cole. That's going to be a loss in Game 3 back in New York. Gerrit Cole has been the best pitcher in baseball for most of the season. He is lights out. And if you're the Yankees, you do not look forward to tomorrow's game.
No, you don't. He has the highest whiff rate in Major League Baseball with almost 43 whiffs per game. I mean, that's incredible. He has the last time he lost, May 22nd. Did you hear that?
I mean, that run is historic. It's stunning.
It is historic, yes.
His control, his power, his ability to overwhelm hitters has been incredible, and he's carried it into the postseason. It's not just one of those things where he's been a good regular season pitcher. He's been outstanding in the postseason here as well.
No, that's right. He rescued Houston out of the Tampa Bay series.
Yep.
You know, and he's had 11 straight starts with over 10 strikeouts each. I mean, it's just staggering. Now, he is going to New York. It's a tough place to play. This lineup is just powerful from 1 to 8. I looked at the 8 and 9 hitters last night. Over 300 batting average.
I mean,
they've really, it's so intense. But, you know, Houston can match it if these bats come alive. And Gerrit Cole is the most powerful pitcher in Major League Baseball, in my opinion.
Well, the word in Houston this morning was with Correa's home run, perhaps that was the catalyst to unleash the bats, get the offense, get their mojo going again.
Get the mojo going. Yeah, I hope so, because they've got a lot of offensive power. And, you know, interestingly enough, Correa missed almost half the season with injury with the back. Injury that was tweaked with the very strange rib cracking situation.
The massage gone bad.
Don't use Correa's masseuse, apparently. But you look at the Yankees. I mean, they've had, you know, 30 players have visited the IL. And none more so than Giancarlo Stanton, who played 18 games in the regular season for the Yankees. Was a scratch for last night because of a quad tweak.
He has really been snake bit this year.
Wow.
But credit Aaron Boone, credit the Yankees for overcoming a whole swath of injuries. It's been a remarkable season what they've overcome.
I mean, 104 wins with that many people on their injured list is remarkable.
So as we sit here,
we got a game going
on. Well, the Cardinals are visiting the Nationals. It is 0-0 after 2. And I will tell you, I'm impressed with the Nationals. It's so interesting to look back because remember at the trade deadline, there were whispers that the Nationals were going to be sellers. That they would sell out, that they had no chance. And now you look at their rotation, and they are a scary team in the postseason.
I mean, that starting three of Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, and then you,
I'm going to throw
favorite,
in Annabelle Sanchez.
Annabelle.
I mean, look at him. He almost had a no-hitter, right? So if you throw him into the mix, they've got a big four. All of whom have pedigree, have shown great abilities in the, well, that group is going to be scary for either the Yankees or the Astros, assuming the Nationals get there.
Oh, it's going to be, it's going to be electric because they really are powerful. And then they've got You know, Ryan Zimmerman just with clutch hits all the time. You know, it's just they surprise you. They've surprised me. They've got Soto. They've got Rendon. They've got really powerful hitters that.
Well, clearly they surprised a lot of people given the conventional wisdom they were going to be sellers at the trading deadline.
And the Bryce Harper-less Nationals were supposedly going to not do as well.
Yep.
And the Phillies were going to be leading the NL East. And look what's happened now.
Maybe not. We've and they're looking for a new manager, too.
On the verge of going to the World Series, and the Phillies manager's fired, and they didn't make the playoffs. And you know what's so cool? The Nationals clinched their playoff berth by beating Philadelphia. Kind of some sweet revenge if you're not a fan of Bryce Harper.
Okay, the one thing, I look at this NLCS right now, and I still can't believe the Dodgers are not in the mix.
Feels weird.
How did that happen? This team has been so good for so long with so many great players, and they've got some great young players mixed in with some great veterans, and yet they are still sitting at home. They will not go home with the title this year.
It still hasn't sunk into me. I really can't believe it. I mean, I think this has got to be the biggest postseason upset ever. I mean, not to get out of the first round. I still am stunned.
He's got many years left on his contract, Dave Roberts does. But do you question whether they should bring him back?
Yes, I do.
It's really hard. If I were a member of the Dodgers team, if I were a fan of the Dodgers, if I were trying to sell tickets to Dodgers games next year, it's really hard to say what's going to be different. How do you create a better team and say, oh, on the field, we're better? It feels like they need to create a different manager.
Because they've got the talent. They've got the payroll. They've got the general manager and Andrew Friedman, who is brilliant. And they've got the analytics, which they use very well. But it seems like what they are missing is the actual human component of it. Throwing Clayton Kershaw out there. You know, he's a starting pitcher. Throwing him out there in the eighth inning, which he did get some outs, but then bringing him back out and he blew up. I mean, it's things like that. You know, same with Yu Darvish. You look at the 2017 World Series against Houston. Yu Darvish got rocked in game two. They bring him out in game seven, a series clinching game seven, and he was tipping pitches and it was a disaster. So you've got to scratch your head on that. It's not just, oh, well, he's got some bad luck. You know, Kershaw had bad luck, or Darvish. It's some really poor decision making.
Well,
it
and
seems like.
Pile on here. Dave Roberts left Joe Kelly in, or brought him back out for a second inning.
Inning I one, love that Joe Kelly. That
well,
so
inning one was fine, but Kelly had not pitched more than one inning since way back on August 24th, and so to bring him back out a second inning was tempting fate. And well, by the time that Kelly Jensen came into the game, it was too late. And the Dodgers will not be part of the postseason going forward.
Well, and part of it, too, is trusting your staff. And, you know, Kenley Jansen in 2017 in the World Series, I mean, he was the guy. No one could hit off of him. And they really, obviously, they don't have the confidence they in him anymore.
Yep.
And so they left Kelly in longer, brought Kershaw back longer, and it ended up costing them their season.
All right, when we come back, we will shift gears. We're going to talk a little NFL. The Packers playing the Lions tonight on Monday Night Football. We'll ask the question, is the Pack back? Are Rodgers and LaFleur getting along very well? It'll be, well, the Packers and the Lions on Monday Night Football tonight. You're listening to the Boston Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Carla, do not take a chance of being stranded. Stop by your O'Reilly Auto Parts and get your battery tested. It's free of charge and one of the many services available. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the exact battery for your car or truck. That's O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
I might need a new battery after staying up till 1:30 last night.
Well, you did your duty.
I love baseball in October especially, too. It's so exciting.
Well, we have some Monday Night Football underway. Lions jumping out to an early lead, 3-0. And Lions may be better than people gave them credit for. But I've been noting, I think the Packers are better than people sort of predicted at the beginning of the year. There were questions about how Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers would get along, whether the new offense would fit Aaron Rodgers. But they have worked another Aaron into the running game, and that is working
very well.
Aaron Jones, who is powerful and impactful against the Cowboys last week. I know the Packers would love to perpetuate that momentum this week against the Lions.
He leads the NFL in touchdowns. I mean, Aaron Jones had four, I'm sorry, but against your Cowboys.
Yes.
Last week, so that was big. And both, it's interesting, both Green Bay and Detroit are the only teams in the NFC North with one loss. That's it.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
I mean, that's actually a good division mm-hmm. there, the NFC North. When you stack them up and you look across the league, that NFC North probably, I mean, given what the
it's
Vikings...
It's one of the best divisions
the Vikings,
football,
when Kirk
sure.
Cousins is playing well and you throw in the Lions and the Packers are good and the Bears have a great defense, yeah, that's a pretty strong division.
So it's a good matchup tonight. I mean, the Lions have owned Green Bay for the last several meetings, three of the last four, I think, so...
All right, well, we will keep you apprised of that one as it unfolds.
No, Detroit's won four in a row versus Green Bay.
That's hard to believe. That you don't think of that normally.
And they beat him 31-0 at Lambeau.
And Stafford just completed a deep one, taking the Lions deep into Packer territory, Lions leading 3-0. Okay, there were a couple of great matchups yesterday.
You think just a couple?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I was loving yesterday.
All right, well, let's talk about the Texans over the Chiefs.
Oh.
Marquee matchup. Remember my line last week? I was mad that the world a couple weeks ago had described Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes as the next Brady versus Manning, when we all knew it really needed not to be Lamar Jackson, but Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. And I think we had a taste of that yesterday.
What a game for the Texans. In the 15-year history of this franchise, this is by far the best road win, but it may be the best complete game I've ever seen the Texans put together. Credit Bill O'Brien. I don't credit him often, but he called a perfect game. He called bold play calling. He called to win.
Well, he did two things offensively. One is he ran the ball very well, taking advantage, frankly, of a weak rush defense by the Kansas City Chiefs. Carlos Hyde was outstanding yesterday.
He was incredible. Hyde had 26 rushes for 116 yards.
Yeah, that's
he could do anything he wanted.
And when you run the ball like that, then it sets up everything else. And the other thing they did is they intentionally got the ball out of Watson's hands much quicker. I mean, there were a lot of shorter passes.
That was brilliant because it really got the Texans. If you watched the beginning of the game, it was not looking good. The Texans were coming from behind because of just, you know, fumbling on a punt return. The whole deal was just a mess. I turned it off because I thought, I cannot watch this. But
if you turn it off, let me just ask you. So you turn off the TV. A game you care very much about.
Right.
Yet you want to come back if the game gets tight, and things don't unravel. So how do you know then? Or do you just go back, you later go turn it on and just see where things are?
Yes, I just give myself a timeout. I had just come back from Mass. I'm like, I cannot be swearing this early in a game. This is not good.
Yeah, no, give yourself a little break.
Yep. And I just decided.
Hold the cursing till later, please.
Right. I mean, my gosh, it was a noon game. I really needed to chill out with that. But no, fantastic. Fantastic rhythm that Deshaun Watson and the play calling got the Texans into with the shorter passes. The tight ends, Darren Fells and Jordan Akins, it's the first time really they've had real tight ends. So they posed several, you know, five different receivers that were getting passes. And then you've got Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson up the middle. It was really exciting to see the Texans just gain momentum. And then let's not forget the defense was pressuring Mahomes in Kansas City the whole game. The defense had a great game, and they lost. Jonathan Joseph, you know, our starting safety, he didn't even play yesterday. Then they lost Roby, who was having a fantastic game. But Tashaun Gibson stepped up, did beautifully. Mahomes was under a lot of pressure. Zero sacks on Watson for the second week in a row.
Well, of course, for the last couple of years, that's been the challenge. It's protecting Deshaun Watson. I will say, the gap, frankly, could have been bigger. I mean, Fuller had some big-time drops.
Three drops of very long, sure touchdowns.
So while he didn't convert them, they at least stretched the field, right?
Right.
The Kansas City defense has to respect that deep speed that Fuller brings to the table. And law of averages, he'll start to catch more of those going forward.
Right. And there's some really cool stats that I uncovered before the Chiefs game because I thought, I want to kind of fill my cup with some good stuff just, you know, because who knows what's going to happen here. The Texans have scored touchdowns on almost 75% of their trips into the red zone. They are second in the NFL only to Seattle, who scores 77% of the time. They're first in the league on third downs, converting over 53%. Like,
impressive.
Amazing
yeah.
stats.
Very
amazing
impressive.
Stats. So they're coming along. Look what happens when you just protect your franchise back
What
there.
A difference a couple of weeks makes, though. I mean, it's amazing. Just a couple of weeks ago, people were ready to run Bill O'Brien out of this city.
Right, between Atlanta and Kansas City. And this was all done at Arrowhead yesterday.
Sure.
Which
a
was so loud. I watched, you know, center Nick Martin kept turning around and tapping his helmet, you know, letting Deshaun know he can't hear him. And so they made pretty great adjustments. There were a couple false starts, but not many. But I think if you're a Chiefs fan, what are you taking away from this besides, wow, our defense gave up 118 on the ground to Hyde alone?
Yeah, the word for Kansas City is soft. The defense is not stout, and the offensive line has not done a good job of protecting Patrick Mahomes. They are flash, and they are dash, and they are fun to watch.
So fun.
I mean, Mahomes can fling it all over the field. There are whispers this week coming out of Kansas City that maybe they should just sit him for a week, let him get his ankle 100% healed, because he's not fully mobile the way he was.
No, he's not. And even his throws are not getting the same spin on it that he normally does. And that happened really more in the second half we saw yesterday. But Tyreek Hill is back.
Yeah, he's back.
Oh, boy.
He actually had a good game.
He had a great game, unfortunately.
So the interesting, they probably could rest Mahomes for a week, but breathing down their necks are the Raiders and their division, the 3-2 Raiders, who have come out of nowhere to be in the consideration now. Same record. I mean, two losses.
As the Chiefs
in their division. Amazing.
It is incredible. And Mahomes did throw his first interception all season yesterday against the Texans, so. And, you know, one of the battles I was looking to watch was Frank Clark versus Laremy Tunsil.
Yep.
Tunsil owned it. Frank Clark really was not a factor.
And then the news on Titus Howard, the Texans' first-round pick, he left the field. There was some concern he'd torn his ACL. Apparently not. He's got a sprained MCL, will likely sit out about 4 weeks. I guess it's still to be determined. But he's a key element, I mean, to this offensive line. I guess Roderick Johnson filled in well for him.
He did.
On the right
filled
tackle
really
spot.
Nicely.
But so much of that offense, if you give Deshaun Watson time, he can be very, very dangerous. And frankly, now he emerges on the short list of candidates to win the MVP award.
Well, leading up to this game, you know, it was Mahomes versus Watson. Who's going to take? And wow, I mean, there wasn't a contest after yesterday, you know, for this week.
Sure.
For week six.
Another matchup, a great matchup yesterday with a lot of pedigree on the two teams, the 49ers and the Rams.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was a beatdown. 49ers are here. They're legit.
Well, their defense is really, they have invested so much draft capital in that for the past several years. And the patience that the Niners organization has shown.
Yep.
They're not flashy. They have just got, I mean, the Jimmy G was a big, big signing. But honestly, and Jimmy G,
but they didn't give up that much draft capital because Bill Parcells did somebody a favor. I don't really know how that all went down, but it worked out well for them. They got their franchise quarterback, assuming he becomes one, relatively cheap. And you're right. They've got incredible talent on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I mean, the Niners are 5-0. They are the only undefeated team in the NFC. They stand alone. They haven't been 5-0 since 1990. I mean, this is just
they
really...
They had some pretty talented teams in the 1990 season, didn't
Does
they?
Does Joe and Jerry ring a bell to you at all? But, you know, what's interesting is looking on the other side of that game, which was the Rams. They, you know, scored 7 points against San Francisco. And when I look at Jared Goff, who signed a big fat contract a month before the season started, with $110 million guaranteed, he's got a 27 QBR. Would you pay $110 million guaranteed for a 27
That's
QBR?
That's looking like a very, very bad contract right now. And Sean McVay, the genius, doesn't look so smart right now.
No, I think we need to ask Lindsay Rhodes.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Lindsay Rhodes. She is an analyst, an NFL reporter for NFL Network, and we'll ask her what the view of Sean McVay should now be as the Rams sit 3-3. You're listening to the Boston Gloss SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, welcome back. And joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Lindsay Rhodes. She's an analyst for the NFL Network. Lindsay, welcome into the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hi, how are you?
Well, we are great. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, we've been talking a little bit while we were talking about the Rams 49ers game, and would love to ask you your perspective on the Rams. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Sean McVay was a genius and everybody wanted to find the next Sean McVay, and he turned Jared Goff into a franchise quarterback. And now they sit at 3-3. Is the bloom off the rose a little bit? What's going on in L.A.?
Yeah, I think it may be. I think at this point it looks like teams have kind of maybe figured Sean McVay out a little bit, and now it's kind of balls in his court to try and figure out a way to counter that. And I think we're still kind of waiting for the answer from him. I think that the injuries to the running back position, well, Todd Gurley this year have, I think they've clearly been a factor, even though they keep telling us that he's fine prior to this week when he quite clearly wasn't fine. There's something going on there that just isn't the same as last year. And the pieces on the offensive line have, those have been big losses. Just in general, there's a lot that isn't going right for them. And I think at this point, it's maybe time to start thinking about that team in a different context than we did last year. I don't know that they're going to be up there with the best teams in the NFC this year.
You know, Lindsay, it started with Gurley, you know, right before the Super Bowl last year, where it seemed like he wasn't right, yet they weren't coming forthcoming with it. And clearly in games where Gurley had 20 or more carries, they were winning, and you're seeing him get like 5 carries a game, which is carried over now. Why aren't they being upfront about Gurley until their hand is forced? Oops, I think
comfortable with just basically lying to us, but it does feel like that a little bit, because the alternative is that Sean McVay keeps saying like, oh yeah, that's on me, I forgot to use him, which I also find pretty hard to believe. You know, I mean, he's proven himself to be a really good coach. Would a really good coach just forget that the best weapon is there and available? And so I didn't buy that down the stretch last year. And then also, by the way, when we weren't buying that down the stretch last year, we found out after the fact that there were some components to his knee that were bothering him. So there's also been a pattern created where maybe they weren't completely forthcoming with the truth. Not so much that they were lying, but just that they didn't tell us the full truth at the time. And strategically, I get that, but I didn't totally understand in the off season when they were saying that everything was fine and we're going to move forward with this, and yet, yes, there is an arthritic component to his knee and we're just going to manage his workload, but that's just an off-season thing. It's not an in-season thing. And then we saw at the beginning of the season it was kind of an in-season thing, and we're not seeing him used the same way. So clearly something is going on there, and at this point what they've said hasn't matched what they've actually done. And so I'm kind of at the point where I am ready to wash my hands of it and just say, okay, when you're good again, like, then we'll check back and we'll touch base. Because right now I'm not seeing anything that shows me that they're anything close to the Rams product they put on the field last year.
I'm going to jump on your train. I'm with you, Lindsay, on that one.
We're talking to Lindsay Rhodes of NFL Network. Love to ask you about another team that is seemingly very disappointing right now, standing at 3-3, the Dallas Cowboys. What do you think has gone wrong in the last 3 games on the offensive side of the ball? Kellen Moore is still there. All those talents are there. They've had some injuries. What do you think's happening there?
Well, I think there's some injuries on the offensive line have probably had an effect in the last couple of games. Dak, when he's pressured versus Dak when he's not pressured, is a different Dak. So I think, you know, we shouldn't just be too quick to look past that. But I also think that there's a little bit of adjusting that's maybe happened with a few games worth of game film now for Kellen Moore and what he was trying to do on offense. And now defense have had a chance to sit down and look at the tape and say, okay, so now we kind of know what they're trying to do. So what do we want to do as a defense to stop that? And I think that Kellen Moore's offense is having a harder time doing what it did in those first couple of weeks of the season, just because it had the advantage of newness. That said, you know, you see like Ezekiel Elliott and they use him early, but then they go away from Ezekiel Elliott and they don't just keep pounding it. And so I think that there's an element of teams who just kind of tried to sort of figure it out what's going on offense and found out a way to put it on Dak, like Dak, you know, make a play. And I think that in some ways, because defenses didn't know what was coming offensively speaking in the first couple of weeks of the season, then maybe that gave him a little bit of an advantage. But, you know, we've not seen Dak as the type of quarterback who can throw people open and that kind of stuff. So I think once the defense is adjusted, we're starting to see them kind of come back to the mean. And maybe even, like, starting to get a little bit in their attempt to make the offense go through Dak a little bit more this year, then maybe they're going away from what is actually their strength, which is just the ability to pound the rock the way they did last year. And I know people didn't like their lack of creativity with the old offense, but maybe there's a way to combine a little bit more creativity but also make Ezekiel Elliott your focal point in the way that he hasn't necessarily been.
Lindsay, yesterday in the Battle of the Basement when the Dolphins and Washington played, so the Dolphins are down 17-3 to Washington, and first-year coach Brian Flores decides to bench Josh Rosen. And you can see he was 15 of 25, 85 yards, two interceptions. Benches him for Ryan Fitzpatrick, who does spark them, not enough for a victory. Washington ends up taking it. And Rosen has never been benched in his career, which is fascinating. College, high school, and now the pros until yesterday. But Brian Flores afterwards said, Rosen has done a really good job for us. He's going to remain our starter. I'm scratching my head. Why is he keeping Rosen in as a starter?
I feel a little bit badly for Josh Rosen because that whole Miami situation is such a mess right now that I'm not sure we've really had much of an opportunity to gauge what Rosen can do. Yes, it hasn't looked good when he's been in, that's for sure. And maybe a really good quarterback, you could make the argument that a good quarterback can take weapons that aren't as great and he can make them better. And I don't know that, I think it's fair to say that Rosen hasn't done that with the weapons around him in Miami. But it's just so tough to really analyze what he is as a quarterback and how good he could possibly be if you put him in the right situation. Because he hasn't been in the right situation yet.
Not with Arizona either,
right? So it's possible. I mean, maybe they're just kind of saying, like, we still think that he gives us the best chance to win over Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the chance to win is still admittedly poor. But also, we really want to see him play so that we know if we have to move on. I mean, one could argue that you've seen enough, right? That the sample size has been big enough that you know that you got to go draft a quarterback. But at least this way, they'll know at the end of the year, like, we've worked with him as much as we can, and we think that this is the potential that's there, and we think that this is where the deficiencies are too great to overcome, and maybe it gives them a better idea of what they actually have and whether they should pay him at all next year. I mean, that's my best guess.
We're talking to Lindsay Rhodes of the NFL Network. Let me ask you, on this theme of quarterbacks who have struggled in difficult situations, the great class of 2015 had Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston in the draft at the top as quarterbacks.
It was a perfect reaction.
And neither one of them. I mean, right now, it looks like, I mean, they're coming up on their end of their rookie deals. Do either of them have a future with their teams at this moment?
I am leaning toward no. I think, in my opinion, we've seen enough Jameis to know exactly what we're getting out of Jameis.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe the circumstances were such where Bruce Arians wanted to come in and say, okay, let me have a stab at it. I like the fact that he's willing to go downfield because as any fantasy football person knows, his air yards are insane. So, and for crying out loud, he was the leading passer of the week in yards Like, all of those fumbles and turnovers that we saw this week from Jameis Winston, and he was still the leading passer in terms of yardage. So if he could just curb the turnover problem and make better decisions, then he gives you a chance to move the ball downfield. And if you've got guys like Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, I mean, my gosh, that's got to be appealing to you as an offensive coordinator, an offensive mind like Bruce Arians has. But I think that we've seen a large enough sample size to know that you can't curb the turnover problem and that the decision-making is just not there for Jameis. And so I would tend to think that the Bucs go in a different direction in the offseason. I thought that they should have last season. And I think that at this point, it's getting bad enough for Marcus Mariota in Tennessee that I think we're going to move in the same direction. I think we'll probably see them, you know, in the league somewhere else next year. I think Cam Newton is somebody else who switches teams in the offseason.
Well,
so,
that was my very next question. I mean, given what Kyle Allen has done, how do you take him out of that role? When Cam Newton's healthy, is Kyle Allen now the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers?
I think Kyle Allen is the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers until he has a bad enough game or a couple of bad enough games that you have a reason to go back to Cam Newton. But at this point, if Cam Newton is healthy tomorrow or the next week, if Kyle Allen has another good game or a good enough game, then I don't think there's any reason to go to Cam Newton right now. And frankly, you know, we talk about Cam Newton, we say, but he was an MVP. And yes, he was an MVP, and that was such a great year. And we've seen some very good Cam Newton, but we haven't seen that Cam Newton for a couple of years now. So you're not comparing Kyle Allen to the Cam Newton MVP years. You're comparing Kyle Allen to what Carolina has had the last couple of years from Cam Newton. And that hasn't been the greatest. And admittedly, he hasn't been healthy. He played, you know, for a stretch of games at the end of the year last year where he wasn't healthy. And then at the beginning of the year this year, he admitted that he wasn't healthy in the games that we saw him. But I'm at the point where I think Kyle Allen's better fit for the North Turner offense and what he wants to do there. And he has some turnover problems that he needs to clean up too, but he is...
they're winning with him.
I think he gives you a better shot, you know? And there were even a couple of plays yesterday where he had really, really nice throws that were just dropped by wide receivers. So, you know, he's not doing anything that's super sexy outside of the lack of interceptions, but he's certainly getting the job done. He's putting the offense in a position to succeed. And so I think you got to stick with that. I don't know that Cam Newton is not the quarterback in Carolina next year because of Kyle Allen necessarily, but I do think that what he does is he gives you an out from a financial standpoint and based on what we've seen from Cam in the last couple of years to maybe start over.
Lindsay, we've got about a minute left. Would love to ask you a quick question as a fellow Trojan about USC. Lots of talent on that team. I know. Fight on. But very inconsistent.
Well, I mean, yay that you're a fellow Trojan.
Yes, exactly.
Not yay to USC right now.
I know. We got to stick together because it's not too pretty. No athletic director and yikes. But they're not really consistent at 3-3. Clearly, they're on, you know, third string quarterback. Can Clay Helton keep his job? You know, they had lost to BYU in a close game, close loss to Notre Dame with very questionable roughing the passer call, big win in Utah. Can Helton keep his job, and does he deserve to?
I don't see that happening. You know, so as my husband tells me all the time, and he's a UCLA fan, how obnoxious I sound when I talk about USC, because it's just, I'm like, oh, it's not fun being bad at football. And he's like, no, you're not bad at football. You're like in and out of the top 25. This is how everybody else lives. You know, you're not in the
we're spoiled,
one
Lindsay.
Or top five or something like that. But I'm like, yeah, that's just not what we do. You know, so if you're not in that mix, then what are we doing? Like, that's the whole point. And the way that they recruit the talent that they get there, you should be in that mix every year. And again, I know that sounds super obnoxious, but, I just don't think that the fan base, the way that USC's fans are and the way that the donors are, that they're going to be here for another year of Clay Helton at this point. I think I would be shocked if once a big stretch, just because, again, they're out of what. You want a national title. You want to be in the hunt for the BCS game. I mean, I guess maybe if they can come back and win the South and potentially go to the Rose Bowl, that makes it harder to fire him. But I suppose it depends on what the option is as far as replacements go. And I kind of think that might be where we are right now, that he is here because of the $15 million buyout. Let's not look past that.
Right.
Like, what in the world? How did that happen? But anyway...
that's
and
why there's
going to
be an athletic
have a
director.
In place.
All right, Lindsay Rhodes, thank you so much for joining us on This Nation Radio.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Lindsay. Talk to you soon.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Loved hearing from Lindsay Rhodes of the NFL Network.
Great.
And the one thing she said that just stands out to me, because I really believe this, is I think Kyle Allen is just a much better fit in Norv Turner's offense. And so bringing back Cam Newton brings all kinds of risks. I think it takes the mojo of that offense away.
I mean, it's working. The Kyle Allen experiment is working. And Christian McCaffrey is, in my opinion, front runner for the MVP. So why would you it's not broke. Don't fix it.
Kyle Allen does a great job of getting the ball into McCaffrey's hands in space. Anyway, the Panthers' mojo is working.
He's 5-0 as a starter with zero turnovers.
Congrats to them.
Wow.
When we return, we'll give you an update on the big games tonight.